tip today in association with Slattery's of Pecan, your main Peugeot dealer for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.
Thanks, Amy. You're welcome back to the third hour of Tip Today, 1800-938-007. Trudy is with me in studio trying to break my computer. Incredibly reaction to the two boys.
Absolutely.
Where do you even start?
I don't know, because literally this, the texts and the calls and the phones just never stopped inside. I'll go through a few of the handwritten ones I have first. A lot of people agreeing with Albert. Mary called and said that it was an absolute disgrace, that the man shouldn't be coming here on our dime, that it's far too expensive. And another caller says, you know, 20 million is absolutely crazy, and if he does come, the first place he should be brought to is to tomb to see the graves of the poor babies there. Then she says you should be brought to see the homeless in Dublin, and that, you know, never mind spending 20 million, 2 million shouldn't be spent on this trip. Another person got in contact in Clonmel to say that, if he comes over, he should stay in a homeless hostel, and that's where the pope that should be put up. There shouldn't be 20 million put on a trip like that. It kind of goes on like that. Margaret O'Mara in Turtle got in Thurles, and she said she agrees with Albert that Pope can pay to come for himself. That amount of money is obscene. Caroline Eli also got in touch to say it's desperate, Fran. It's a disgrace to be spending that much on a visit from the Pope. It doesn't stand for reason. And she said, for God's sake, pardon the pun. Then David and Clamel got in touch to say, quite frankly, your guest comments border on the absurd. Like it or not, he's a head of state. Like it or not, he will generate considerable revenue from tourism, as Pope Benedict's visit to the UK did. The 20 million is an estimate. Where is the moral outrage when the red carpet is laid out for our heads of notorious human rights abusers like those from China? That's according to David in Clonmel. Another disagrees and said that man is perfectly right. It's an outrage to have those sleeping on concrete and they can't look after them because there's no money. And where are they getting the money for this? They're spending millions on security and they won't secure a place for the destitute in this country. And I'm telling you, they go on. Mags got in contact. Fran, my thoughts on bringing the Pope to Ireland should definitely not happen because of the outrageous cost. And again, she agrees with Albert, outrageous costs seem to run quite a bit. Tell that man to run for election, says Breda. I'll vote for him. He's making sense. Someone else took exception to what Albert was saying about Thurles. It's absolutely scandalous to compare a town like that to a third world country. Disgusting. Mary Purcell pointed out that you've Dew Valley in Thurles. Not a lot of interest of industry, but it's something, and it is indeed something. It employs a lot of people here. Someone else got in contact to say, Fran, the Vatican has untold wealth, so let the Vatican pay for his visit. Wish you and your loved ones a very happy Christmas. Thank you and many happy returns. And Martin got in touch from Turtle to say, I agree with Albert. I would love to go on holiday to Italy to see the Pope. Sure, we could all go. Another says, I agree with everything Albert says. The Catholic Church, one of the richest organisations in the world, let them pay their own way and spend the rest on the poor and the homeless. Again, I agree with Margaret. I agree with Albert. That comes in from Margaret. A huge waste of money. When we have huge problems in Ireland, the government doesn't know how to spend properly. They go on to say, if Jesus was alive, he would say, waste money and pomp and ceremony. She should be looking after the poor and after the sick. Elaine Power got in touch to say she agrees with Albert. You look after our own first. Another caller agreed with her and said what Albert said was 100% right. Sue McGrath said, Fran, why don't the Vatican pay for the Pope's trip? Biggest bank in the world. I won't be one for going to the Phoenix Park. And that is Sue from Holy Cross there. Someone else, Villain Temple Moore, got in touch. Why would the Pope visit a country that the world leaders in legislation for Sodom and Gomorrah and the death for the unborn? 20 million sounds like he's get the treatment reserved for bankers, developers, estate agents and carpetbaggers. Our homeless will be spared, not by the government intervention. How will they legislate to spare the damned rest of us?
This is unbelievable, the amount of suffering.
John Hewitt got in touch to say, all the suffering in the world, some God all right. Another, Albert is so right. Wouldn't it be much more Christian if the Pope was said to give the 20 million to the poor, the homeless and to the mental health. And that came in from Pauline in Ballanderry in Nina. And then another lady, Mary, got in touch to say the Vatican is the richest state in the world. They made a state for themselves so they could avoid paying taxes on their wealth. They have so much antiquities in their vaults that there's not enough days in the year to value them. They can well afford to pay for their own travel. And actually, as I'm looking at the comments, are still coming in, and people are being less kind now. They've gone from the word outrageous to evil and greedy. According to Martin, he says the Vatican's filthy rich in gold. It's a massive industrial business draining their flock's money. Where there is massive money, there is massive greed and evil. Another says, morning, Fran, the Catholic Church want the Pope to visit. If the Pope was Jesus Christ and representative on earth, it is precious in the name of Jesus. Okay. I'm sorry, I can't even read half of that. But anyway, they agree with Albert. And someone else wants to know, why is everything about Dublin
guys look closer to home. So now there's a message for you as well.
Absolutely.
Just pull down the...
I'll let you address those.
It's just interesting that somebody got on to say, no. Back just a little bit again, because somebody says... It's basically that I was judging... Oh, yeah. You're very quick to judge Matty McGraw over an email. Looks like he missed a letter and it will be swiped under the rug. Typical Fran Curry and typical FM. There you go. So that's Tip FM, typical in me. We missed out on a letter. Well, it's just that Michael made reference to a letter that I never saw. So there you go. And I don't remember judging Matty McGraw, but there you go. Judge not and
not
all
at
of
all.
That.
We're all going to be judged in a higher court, isn't that right?
Well, according to Michael anyway, thanks very much indeed, Trudy, for that. 1800-938-007. Now, we all know about the winter solstice at Newgrange on December 21st, but there is one much closer to home this Thursday. Large crowds at Knockroe Passage Tomb near Henny on the Tipperary Kilkenny border. Nestled in the foothills of Schlievemann, it's unique. And let's find out how unique it is, because I'm joined on the line now by Richard Walsh of Coshill Conservation Committee. Good morning to you, Richard.
Good morning, Frank.
And it's very good to talk to you today. Will you tell us a little bit of the history of this passage tomb?
Well, the passage tomb was really discovered back in 1987. Up to then, the locals knew there was something there but didn't realise the importance of it. And then in 1990, Professor Mary O'Sullivan from UCD started excavating the tomb, and over the next 4 years he discovered lots of carvings. He discovered the alignments to the setting sun on the 21st, and following on from that, then in the around about 2008, they also realised that the eastern tomb was aligned to the rising sun on the same day, which makes it the only passage tomb in Ireland and indeed in Europe with alignments to both the rising and the setting sun on the 21st.
Isn't that incredible? Now, I know Knockroe on the border of Kilkenny and Tipperary. Where exactly is it? Where is the nearest landmark to it?
Well, I suppose from the Tipperary people, the Henny Village and the Henny High Crosses would be the nearest. When you're travelling, say, from Clonmel to Callan on the N76, before you come into the Grange Mochler, you turn to the right there, it's signposted for a Henny, actually, but there's no signpost for Knockroe.
Right.
But, at the moment, we have temporary signs up from that junction that will direct you into it, you know.
And is it easy to access, Richard?
It is. It's on narrow country roads, but and then down a little farmer's laneway. If you're coming in, it will be a bit mucky, but the ground is solid and there's no problem walking in, you know.
This is obviously an area of much importance and much significance. Why don't we hear more about it, do you think?
To be honest, I'm not too sure. Like, WPW owned the site and they're looking after it very well, but they did in 2011, they launched a conservation plan for it in Carrick Castle, and while work on that plan began, I suppose the country ran into a bit of difficulty and the money wasn't there. So there's not as much done on it as we would have liked to see done, you know.
Right. Have you witnessed the chambers capturing both the sunrise and sunset during the solstice?
I have on many occasions now.
Right. That must be very special, Richard.
It is. It's an amazing sight to be in and sort of to be there to...
Right.
To see it, yeah.
And its relationship to Newgrange, how is it related?
Similar stones would have been used in the construction of both tombs. Different types of stone used to identify possibly gods or something like that. And the main thing of a difference really is that the stones used in Knockgow would have come from the locality, where in Newgrange the same type of stone was brought in from a distance. So obviously these stones would be special to the builders of the tombs, but they were in the locality in Knockgow rather than being brought in from a distance away.
Isn't it very interesting indeed? So these were pagan people, Richard, were they?
Well, we can only assume yet that they were worshipping the sun or using the sun to mark the shortest day of the year and the beginning of the new year, which would have been very important to them.
Right, but to build something with such accuracy as to capture on that particular day the sunrise and sun is incredible, like feat of engineering and mathematics, and
it's amazing, and like we would probably have difficulty doing it today. What they were able to do back 5,000 years ago without any scientific instruments and that, it's amazing altogether, yes.
Isn't it just? Can people go along there on the 21st?
Yes, and indeed, about 2 to 3 days before and after the 21st, you will also see the alignment. But on the 21st, we're looking after parking and that, because we do get a massive crowd there.
Right.
We just have to take care of the parking and that, just to keep the roads free.
And what time is the best time to go there at?
The morning solstice occurs at 20 to 9,
mm-hmm.
and the evening solstice at 20 to 4. Now, you would need to leave, say, a half an hour before that, just because you have to walk in a bit off the road.
Yeah. Of course. Well, it's fascinating, Richard, and I was delighted you could talk to us about it. It's an area I haven't been to. I'd love to see it. I'd really love to go and have a look. Good to talk to you today, Richard.
Thank you, Fran, and you'd be very welcome down if you want to come down and do a bit of recording on the day even.
We would love to do so. We would love to do so, and I will take you up on that if that's okay, and I'll make contact with you about it. Good to talk to you, and a happy Christmas to you, Richard. Thank you.
Thank you, Fran.
Bye-bye, Gina. Bye-bye. That's Richard Walsh there of Cashel Conservation Committee there, the people who look after Knockgow Passage Tomb, and it's near Aheny, I suppose. That's the nearest point of contact there on the borders of Tipperary and Kilkenny. It's 11:16 right now. Back with more in just a moment.
If it matters to you, it matters to us. Call TIP today on 1-800-938-007.
Today, a group of 30 children with special needs from the Chernobyl-affected region of Belarus jet into Ireland for a two-week Christmas rest and recuperation holiday. Chernobyl Children International has brought 25,500 children to stay with host families in Ireland over the past 26 years. And, of course, the lady behind Chernobyl Children International is Tipperary woman Aidy Roach. And Aidy is online with me. Good morning to you, Aidy.
Well, good morning, Fran, on this extraordinarily special day.
It is a very special day indeed, and thank you for making time for us on such a busy day.
My God, Fran, it's my absolute pleasure, and to be particularly talking to people in Tipperary, my own home place, and I miss it and love it dearly, and on a day like today, because in a sense I suppose you could say Christmas starts for us today in the organisation, because it is always such a joyous and heartwarming moment. And I suppose in a way for the charity it's a way of reminding people of the tragedy that happened 32 years ago, and the impact is felt down the generations. We're now looking at the third generation of Chernobyl children, but it also sends a wonderfully powerful message of hope to the people of the region. And in a sense, what we're witnessing at the airport later this morning is really the embodiment of the meaning of Christmas, which is, you know, surely it's all about kind of love and action, and, you know, it's a reflection of how healthy volunteerism is in Ireland, because year after year, families are asked to open their hearts, to open their homes, to make these special children an integral part of their own family Christmases. So really, I think it's remarkable and a true testament to the power of volunteering all over the country. And particularly, Fran, when, you know, we all recognise the needs in Ireland are great. We're particularly and acutely aware of homelessness, for example, this year as a national crisis. And yet, isn't it marvellous to see that Irish families are still willing to reach beyond our own shores and our own needs and showing huge love for the children of Chernobyl.
Absolutely.
All of these years
particularly,
later.
Particularly at Christmas time, Aidy, when it's such a family time that they're willing to take people into that family unit, you know.
Absolutely. And you know something, Fran? I mean, I just kind of get goosebumps when I'm thinking of the people that are going to converge on the airport this morning. Like, I'm thinking of one young couple, a girl called Trina, and her new husband of only a couple of days, Peter, who's a farmer from North Dublin. They actually postponed their honeymoon in order to be there to greet a very special little girl with special needs from Belarus. They've actually postponed their lives, really, in order to have her in for Christmas. And then we have a guy, would you believe this, Fran, flying in this morning as I'm on radio to you. He's in the air coming from Haiti, where he's the humanitarian aid worker out in that region. And he is flying in to actually take two young lads who are both wheelchair-bound from a children's mental asylum in Belarus, and he's bringing them to his family. In fact, he hasn't even, you know, he won't even see his family before the arrival of the children. So people are just
It's incredibly generous. The children themselves, they're coming from what they describe as an asylum in Belarus. Is that correct to say?
Yes. I mean, I know it's sort of, I suppose it's not a very nice term, or it's not a very nice thought to be thinking the children are put into institutional care. But in a sense, I suppose it's a case of kind of name it and shame it.
Yeah.
It is actually what it is. It's not an orphanage as we would consider like an ordinary orphanage in a regular sense. This is one that has a different status. And, you know, like, I mean, we are slowly but surely changing that brand. We've invested something like 3 million euros given through the generosity of Irish people to actually transforming it really from what was a place of death to a place of hope and a place of life. We've put in an education system there. We've put in an independent living project. Like, we have just done so much to try and ensure that the children have the best lives that they possibly can. But our objective here, Fran, is not to keep propping up an institution. Mm. Our objective is actually to shut it down eventually, and that we will have all of the young children, as many as we can, to get them back their freedom to live in a community, because these children live in a kind of like a modern day apartheid or segregation, as we know it, and because they're segregated because they're different. So we're all about integration. So we're working hugely on getting the rights of these children in order that they can be fully living citizens.
It's fantastic work. Aidy, what happens after the 2 weeks? I would imagine there's heartbreaking scenes at the airport again.
Well, to be honest, Fran, that's the journey that none of us want to take, is the one on the road back to the airport in a couple of weeks' time. But I suppose all we can, and actually some families don't go because they find it too hard. Like, they would, you know, send the children, you know, like with some of our other volunteers who drive them to the airport, because it is heartbreaking seeing the separation. But the only, I suppose, way that like the families console themselves, console the children, is by saying, hang on in there, you have wonderful memories of a very happy Christmas, and you have wonderful memories of being singularly loved by this family, and that they'll have them back again, you know, next summer. And in fact, a lot of us, I'll be back out there myself in a couple of weeks' time, Fran.
Yeah.
We're bringing out a huge team, would you believe, 30 of the Roses of Tralee, including the international Rose herself, who's
Go
a doctor.
On.
Wow. Yeah. We're heading off in early February. So in a sense, we'll also say to the kids, look, you know, while you're sad leaving your family, just remember the Irish people are here for you, and we'll be back over bringing lots of love and care, you know, in situ, in the institution, and making it as best place as it can be.
Well, with all we've been discussing on the show this morning, we needed a good news story like that, Aidy, so thank you for that. Listen, congratulations to you and everybody involved with you.
Oh, listen, and thank you to the people of Tipperary for supporting us all of these years.
Good. And lovely to hear from you again, Aidy. Thank you. And bye-bye to you now. Bye-bye. That's Tipperary's own Aidy Roach there of the Chernobyl Children International. And I'm sure it will be a very emotional day in the airport. I think the kids are arriving in there at about 2 o'clock. This afternoon, but anyway, great stuff altogether. 1800 938 007. We'll take a break, and then we'll be chatting to the mayor of Clanmel, Catherine Carey, and she's going to be talking to us about some rather distressing scenes in the Knocklofty area of Clanmel. Some of those dead horses that we were speaking about yesterday. That's coming up next.
Join the conversation in Tipperary. Contact us through Facebook, Twitter, or email tiptoday@tipfm.com.
Well, yesterday on the programme, we spoke about those awful photographs we were sent of the dead horses in the Knocklofty area just outside of Clanmel. Now, the mayor of Clanmel, Catherine Carey, is online with me. Now, good morning to you, Catherine.
Good morning, Fran.
Catherine, I think you're in Knocklofty as we speak, are you?
I am, Fran, because when I've seen those pictures and I sent them in as well, I could not sleep, you know, it was on my mind. And I contacted the council first thing yesterday morning. And I have to say that the council were very, very good. They put a chap on to me. He told me that he'd be here today. I met with him this morning and the JCB is here and the truck is here now just to pick up the carcasses. But what's so, so heartbreaking, Fran, is I walked through the fields and I thought there was 3 or 4 horses that had starved to death. In fact, we found an awful lot more. There's at least 7 of them, carcasses, as well as the ones that are decomposing as well. It's absolutely heartbreaking. I was actually crying my eyes out while I was taking photographs of these poor animals. I'm here as well with 2 ladies from the Action for Animal Welfare Ireland. One lady has travelled quite a long distance to try and see what we can do to help these poor defenceless animals. That's absolutely heartbreaking, Fran.
And there's some horses still alive there in that area. Is that
there
the way
there certainly is? Yeah, there's about 12 horses alive in the fields. Someone's actually bringing them out some hay now. But, Fran, this is a very temporary solution. We don't need people to bring them out hay, because what's going to happen in a month's time or 2 months' time, people may forget, and these poor horses would be left to starve to death, and that's what's after happening here.
Is that what has happened, Catherine? Have they starved to death?
Absolutely starved to death through neglect. It's absolutely shocking and heartbreaking. My God, I was so upset.
You're sounding very upset over it, Catherine.
Oh, it's dreadful.
And
Fran, do you mind? I'm going to pass you on to one of the ladies who deals with the animal welfare in Ireland.
Yeah. What's her name, Catherine?
I just passed you over. Her name is Sue Walker.
Okay, thanks, Catherine.
Thank you, Fran.
Thanks, Catherine. Sue, good morning to you.
Good morning, Fran.
Good morning to you, Sue. You're live on Tip FM. Can you tell us what you know about this, Sue?
Yeah, I didn't know anything about this until Saturday morning when a friend rang me and said there's at least 2 dead horses in Knocklofty Leisure Centre. And yeah, it's actually, I'm sorry I'm all over the place, because we just found the bones of 4 more horses that have been there like for a year.
And
we found the bones under a tree. And I was just speaking to the guy that's come with the machine, the lorry, to take the bones away of the other dead horses. And he said he took the dead horses away from here last year as well.
And these horses were just allowed to starve, is that it?
Well, I don't think anybody fed them, no. And there's a farmer very kindly brought hay out yesterday once sort of, you know, everybody got involved. There's a bale of hay and one of the members of our group brought hay last night. Yeah, but it's just, I can't believe that in 2017, you know, that this is happening. there's a foal. I think it's a foal died, and then the mother is just really a carcass. And there's a, I presume her foal is alive here, but she's very thin and very distrusting of humans. Can you blame them? And then there's another one that's probably been dead for, I don't know, 2 months, 3 months. And then, as I say, we walked around and just found all these bones from four more horses then.
So the foal is around the carcass of the mother?
So they were, but now they're eating around the... They're eating the hay now because they're so hungry. They're very dispirited and they're just very unhappy, as you can imagine.
Right.
I'm just completely shocked, to be honest, and it takes quite a lot to shock me. I've been in rescue for quite a long time.
So you've seen a lot. Is this the worst you've seen, Sue?
It is, yeah. Yeah,
my God.
It is. It's absolutely appalling.
What can
be... It's like something that you would see somewhere else in the world, not here in Ireland. I just can't comprehend it.
Have the Gardaí been involved in investigating this in some way? Yeah.
Yeah. When we heard, then we rang the guards, and I think they had well over 100 phone calls in our Finnan guard station, and then the ISPCA are here now, and the department are here as well. So something, thank goodness, is going to happen to the horses that are still alive. Because some of them look as though they're in foal, and some of them are not too bad, but some of them are very shook as well.
Yeah, I'm interested to hear, though, that you were speaking to one person who told you that something similar happened last year.
Yeah, yeah, and Matty McGrath, he came out too, and apparently it was reported last year, for horses, and the driver that's just come to take the bones away, he said he took 5 or 6 horses away from here, dead in his truck last year.
My God. What kind of horses are they, Sue?
They're black and white ones. There's a lovely bay foal, and there's a little Minnie, a really cute little Minnie.
Right.
But she's not too bad now. A couple of the brown and white ones are quite thin. And there's a dark bay and a brighter bay. They're not, you know, they need to be fed. They need to be taken away and looked after and loved, because they can't stay here because there's nothing for them to eat. The digger is just going off down the field now to pick up the dead foal.
Well, I mean, somebody with your knowledge and your history in the business of looking after animals, if you say it's the worst you've ever seen, I mean, it's very profound indeed, Sue.
It is extremely profound, but I'd quite like to put you on to my friend now. She's the founder of Action for Animal Welfare Ireland, and she would have more experience of
No problem. And what's her name, Sue?
Anne Williamson.
Okay, no problem. If you put
thank you very much for letting us talk to you.
Thank All right, you. Sue. Thank you for that. Indeed, we're talking about.
Hello,
Anne. How are you?
Not too bad.
Anne, tell me about your view of what's happening there and what has happened there.
Oh, well, to be honest with you, now I've seen a lot of bad cases down. You know, I have a rescue and I've seen a lot of bad cases, and this is just I'm shock, really, to be honest with you. I'm numb now at this stage.
Is it much worse than you thought it was going to be?
Yes, it's much worse than I thought it was.
And there's more horses involved than you thought.
Yeah,
as well,
yes, we found, we went through the woods. We decided, I don't know what brought us through the woods, whether it was fate, I don't know, but we went through the woods and we found 4 more skeletons of horses. And
so these horses have been dying over a period of time.
I'd say those horses are dead with a year, maybe more. So, I don't know.
Are you surprised, Anne, that something hasn't been done before now?
Very, very surprised. And I know people have tried. I know several people have tried and nothing has been done. So hopefully today something will come out of it and the rest of those poor animals will see a brighter future somewhere, you know.
Are you in the least... I mean, you see this all the time. It must be very disheartening, and your faith in humanity must be sort of dodgy after it, is it?
Well, all I keep saying is, if the laws are upheld, we won't have this. This is what I keep saying. Uphold the laws, and this won't happen. Because by law, you're not entitled to have a horse unless he's microchipped, unless he's passported, and unless you have land to put him on. So why is there 14 horses that I'm looking at out in the field here with no microchips, right, with no passports and no land.
So the laws are in place, but you're saying that they're not being policed, is that it?
No, they're not being upheld. Now, I don't know why. Some people are saying, oh, they're afraid to insult certain ethnic minorities. Well, tough. Everyone wants to be equal, so let's be equal in all respects. That's the way I put it anyway. I mean, if I had to go from A to B with a horse, I have to have my passport, I have to have a microchip, or my horse could be taken off me, even if he's a healthy horse. And I mean, I'm looking here at a digger coming out with a poor misfortunate animal that had no chance at life. It's just heartbreaking.
That was allowed to starve to death.
Allowed to starve to death. With people walking by that field, it's by a laneway into an estate.
So what are you saying, Anne, that people would have seen the deterioration of the horses,
yeah,
is that it?
Yeah, they're fed up, they're reporting it big time, and nobody is doing anything about it.
Reporting it, are you talking about reporting it to the Gardaí?
Reporting it to the Gardaí, reporting it to the SPCA, reporting it to the department, reporting to everybody they can, and there's no response. I'm sorry, you know. And maybe it's because, I don't know, there's loopholes in the law or something that they're able to get away with it. But it's just ridiculous. I mean, if a farmer did this, these cattle, he'd be in jail. Simple as that.
Well, I mean, there's no loopholes in the law that I can see. I mean, you're right. If you don't have the microchipped, if that you don't have a place where they can graze, I mean, you're breaking the law. It's as simple as that.
You are. You're breaking the law. That's exactly it, Fran. You're dead on there, breaking the law.
All right, Anne. You're doing your best for these poor animals that are left then in the meantime, are you?
Yeah, we're trying to sort something out.
What is your legal standing on that, though? Can these animals...
Seemingly, I have no legal standing. I'm just the one that takes them in and feeds them and if at all possible, give them back to them.
how do you mean give them back to them?
Because seemingly they're the owners, even though they don't have a microchip or a passport. They're the owners.
So are you saying potentially you might take these horses, look after them, bring them back to health, and you may have to give them back?
Well, in the past, it has been advised that I give them back, but I wouldn't do that. Because if I rescue a horse, I'm not going to send them back to the same
deathbed. You had a situation like this, though, in the past, didn't you, where you fought that?
Oh, I had situations in the past, yeah, but, I mean, you stand your ground and that's it, you know?
All right, Anne. Well, look, it's a dreadful situation. I know I was talking to Catherine there. She was upset. Sue is visibly upset. You're obviously very, very upset about this as well. It's a terrible situation. I presume you'll be pushing for something to be done about this. Something.
Yes. I will be pushing for those animals to be taken out of there. All those gates secured and locked so nothing else can be put in there again. I don't know who owns it. I don't know who owns the land. Some people tell me it's belonged to a man. Some people tell me Nama owns it. I don't know.
Right. Okay.
So, in the meantime,
these poor animals have starved to death anyway.
Yeah, those have starved to death. We've organised feed for the rest of them.
All right.
That's the best we can do.
All right, Anne.
At the moment.
Listen, look after yourself and thank you. Thank you for talking to us today. Thanks,
not
Anne.
Bye-bye.
That's Anne, and we had Sue Walker there, and we had the Mayor of Clonmel, Catherine Carey, out at that horrific sight that obviously is making them audibly upset there as well.
If it matters to you, it matters to us. Call TIP today on 1-800-938-007.
Tipperary is to benefit from dormant accounts funding for sports. Now, it's part of an additional €1.5 million in dormant accounts investment announced for sport and physical activity measures right across the country. Funding for Tipperary Sports Partnership will focus on the development of outdoor adventure initiatives and lots more. Coordinator with the Tipperary Sports Partnership is Valerie Connolly, and Valerie is online with me. Good morning to you, Valerie.
Hi, Fran. How are you?
This is very good news, Valerie. How much are you getting in total?
We're getting a total of 47,000 to develop outdoor adventure in Tipperary, which is a fantastic, it's a nice early Christmas present for us, Fran.
Isn't it just indeed? And it's come from this dormant account funding, which makes it all the better, I suppose.
Yeah, we've been very lucky over the last number of years in Tipperary to be able to secure funding for the development of sport and physical activity through the Dormant Accounts Fund. So we're very thankful to that fund. It has allowed us to do many initiatives over the last few years that wouldn't have been possible without that funding coming through, and that would be administered to Sport Ireland. So it's great to be able to benefit from that.
Right. So to be specific then, what will you do with this, Valerie?
I suppose we've been in that outdoor adventure space for a number of years with the development of the Shore Blue Way and the development of the community sports hub with the slalom course in Clonmel. So as you're aware, there's also the development of Shore Island in Clonmel as a green heart, a green space. So really this funding will be helping us to further develop that, further develop the water activities, looking at activities that can be held on Shore Island as part of the development, such as orienteering, archery, cycling, walking, all of those will benefit you. It's really about getting people out into the outdoor adventure in an urban setting. And I suppose really looking at Clonmel and looking at Shore Island, there's not that many locations in an urban setting that have what Shore Island will have once it's development. So it's great. It's going to give us funding to help kickstart off that project, to help develop.
Very good indeed. I know that some of the funding nationwide will be spent on outdoor recreation equipment. Is it similar in your case? Will you be purchasing some equipment?
Yeah, there'll be purchasing of equipment will probably be part of it, because it's a mixture between capital and current equipment will be part of it, because it's a new area to develop. So for us, so we need the equipment to be able to do it. So the equipment will certainly be part of the funding.
All right, marvellous news indeed. In terms of the sports partnership, I suppose you're urging people, I mean, we'll all be taken to the couches and the bar stools, I suppose, over the next few weeks, but you would still advocate that we'd find some time in there for exercise, Valerie?
I think it's a very important time. We all tend to overindulge on the niceties, but I think as well Christmas time is a nice family time as well, so it's a great to see people out walking and cycling as a family. And I know there's a lot of fun events around the area, with fancy dashes and goal walks that take part on Christmas Day, and there's probably something going on in all the little communities around Tipperary, so take the opportunity to go out and attend those. And that could help people to be active, and hopefully then when January comes around and we're promoting the Operation Transformation Walks, that will be happening across Tipperary as well on the 13th of January, that people will be well able for it by then.
Well, listen, I'm sure you're going to have another busy year as usual, Valerie. It's great to talk to you today, and congratulations on receiving that funding. I'm sure you'll put it to very good use indeed. Thanks, Valerie. Happy Christmas. Thanks. Valerie.
And you too. Thanks, Ron. Take care. Right. Bye-bye.
Look after yourself. Bye-bye to you now. That's Valerie there of the Tipperary Sports Partnership, 1800-938-007. Let's go to Trudy. Trudy, I'm not sure what you can do with all of the text that has come in following the horses.
There isn't a whole pile of lot that I can do. Yeah, a lot of people very, very angry. A lot of people pointing their anger at one particular ethnic group. So yes, they're pointing their anger at travellers. Mm. Now, can I point out before people lose the rag? Yes, some travellers may misuse or misabuse their horses. Some settled people, some farmers, some, anybody and everybody. So, it's not fair in one regard to point all the blame towards one particular group. I know a lot of people are very angry over it. But, I know of cases over the years in this job where there have been, it has been non-members of the travelling community that have misused their animals, and not just horses, but dogs and donkeys. And, I've been to many a case. So I can understand your anger in relation to this. But, you can't tar every single person with the same brush. But yes, it's something that needs to be looked at. I appreciate that. So I'll try and get through some of these. But you have to bear in mind, this is all accusations, so I can't read out texts willy-nilly.
Of course, yes.
Patrick got in touch. Fran, one law for us and another law for the owners of those horses. Nobody will say a word to them. If I did that to my animals, I'd never be allowed to keep animals again. Fran, this is the culture of the people. You gave a soft interview to a few months ago. This is their culture. The sadness of this is unreal. The cruel end for these poor horses. Are you going to read this out, or is it too hot to handle? Utterly heartbreaking. These people shouldn't be untouchable. Funny, you want us to read it out, but you didn't give us your name. And I'm not being unfair here, I'm just pointing it out. Again, some of these I can't. Anne-Marie in Clonmel, thank you to those ladies raising the awareness on those horses in Knocklofty. How is it that people can get away with it? And Anne-Marie says she believes that it is certain members of the travelling community, where the politicians and the cops. That is not proved, Anne-Marie, but I take your point. Where's the media doing their bit? Are they afraid? No, but you can't tar everybody with the same brush. I know very many members of the travelling community who are doing nothing but to better their own lives. Fran, Anne-Marie is a wonderful lady who gave her lives to horse welfare. She deserves our help, but especially the assistance of the so-called powers that be. Well done, Anne. And that comes in from Declan O'Shea. Another says that's their culture. There's another there that I can't even bring myself to read.
Yeah.
So we're going to move off that. Let's say there's a lot of anger, and I can understand that anger. I'm angry. Fran, you're angry. It's disgraceful.
It is.
It's disgusting.
And to hear the ladies in question, so upset,
so devastated.
Upset by what it is that they're looking at.
Absolutely. Nobody should be above the law when it comes to this, and they should be prosecuted fully in regards to this. And another couple of issues, and we will be discussing this tomorrow, because there are more people who want to have their say in relation to that, because as Anne pointed out there, it's believed that that's all part of the Knocklofty estate, and that's obviously before the High Court in terms of NAMA, etc. So where responsibility lies, and what you do in regards to that, but also implementing the laws. And you know, we have the cases like this, but you'll see cases in the papers of other individuals who get away with a fine for abusing their cattle, or for abusing other domesticated animals, puppy farms, for example. So, you know, you have to put it all in context, you know, in terms of it's down to the individual.
All right.
Looking to another couple of issues. Again, a lot of anger still coming in relation to the Pope's visit. However, some callers were also pointing out that, you know, hold on, you know, look at all the money we spend on free legal aid. Like, he's the head of a state, and you know, he has a right to come here. The same caller also felt that we're going to develop a new form of racism in this country, and I think that's in relation to the horses. A couple of more in relation to the trips. Well, I understand Christmas is a time for giving, and these Belarusian children need to see love and have a good time away from their situation. Will there be any humanitarian aid to all of those Irish children who've absolutely nothing this Christmas? Well, you know, we have wonderful groups out there who are doing as much as they can for many of those who have nothing
and
this
they
Christmas,
fundraise,
you know?
And people choose to support those fundraising initiatives.
Absolutely.
So and that's their choice to do so,
you know.
Yeah.
So we have a couple of more. Fran, you're the most fair-minded broadcaster on any radio station
there
in Ireland. There you go. How much did you pay them? Sometimes I wonder how you keep your temper. We love your program. I know there was a few more, if I can find them. Donald Ryan got in touch from Mullinahone, and he wondered, a question for you, Fran, if you had €1,000 to spare, would you give it to the homeless, or would you give it to groups who go out there to protect in terms of suicide prevention? So where would your €1,000 go?
That's an interesting question, isn't it?
Yeah.
You see, where the homeless is concerned, people use this big umbrella term of homeless, but there's so many different types of homelessness.
Absolutely.
And literally there's people living in doorways, and then there's people who are
living on couches.
So it's a strange one.
Yeah.
The whole business of mental health and suicide awareness is very close to my heart. So, it's a tough one.
Maybe you could split it between the two.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe so. Trudy, thanks very much indeed for that. The finalist today in our competition is Pauline Foote from Ballanderry. Nina, well done to you, Pauline. You get into the big draw for February 6th, overnight stay at the Lakeside Hotel in Killaloe, and tickets to that country music extravaganza that's happening there on the 6th of February. And we'll give you another opportunity to get involved in that tomorrow. Now, we're live from Nina tomorrow. Don't forget the big one this coming Friday. We are live from Shannon Airport and looking forward to that as well. Trudy produced. Owen is on the way. And I'm out of here. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye-bye.